Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I am Brad Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that meant a lot to them and left its mark. This week, I have the one, the only Matt Evans on the show. Had a whole lot of fun with this one. Matt is, he does a ton of stuff. The sort of occasion for this is he's got a new duo. New-ish duo with Amurtha Kadambi called Netty Netty, and they had an album come out about a month ago. I don't know the exact release. It's out now on Denzu Artifacts called Echo of Being, Grace and Rot. It is a stellar record. I have listened to it a lot. I continue to listen to it a lot, and yeah, it's great. And Matt, he's done a lot of cool stuff in recent years. I don't know. I'm a big fan. Matt's, we talked about way too many songs. That's not true. Yeah, I will say, and I said this in the show notes, his answer to the lyrics question, I love everybody who's been on the show. Let me just preface this with that. It's my favorite answer. And yeah, you'll see why. Real quick before we get to the meat of this, thanks everybody for listening, as always. And if you enjoy the show, please, wherever you listen to podcasts, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. All that stuff really, really helps because, you know, algorithms and all that. But I really appreciate it. So this gets in more people's ears. And if you really like the show, you like Foxy D, you want to see it all keep going in 2026, please join the Patreon, patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis, for as little as $3 a month. That ongoing support just, it helps a ton. It really does help a ton. There's a lot of back-end costs for this stuff. So thank you, though, everybody, for listening. Y'all are the best. And now, I hope you enjoy the episode. My guest today is a musician, a drummer, a composer, collaborator, all sorts of things. It's Matt Evans. Welcome to the show.
Woo. Hey, what's up, Brad? What's up, everyone?
All right. So the main occasion or the big occasion of why we're doing this now rather than any other time is you have a new project. Is it just Netty Netty?
Netty Netty. We've had this project for like kind of started in 2020, like 2020, 2021. And, okay. Really excited about this record, Echo of Being, Grace and Rot, which, feels like the most like beautiful codified, like version of this material that we've been improvising for a few years.
Nice. And should mention, of course, it is a duo with the great Amurtha Kadambi. I was like, gosh, am I going to say your name wrong? No, I think I'm trying to say it. And it's on Denzu Artifacts. Got to shout out them too.
Thank you, Denzu Joe.
Yeah, I know. Denzu Joe.
Legend.
Yeah, dude, that's, God, I love that label. But okay, so to get into the record, so you guys recorded this album in a single day. And I'm curious what it feels like to sort of capture something that's so emotionally charged in that sort of compressed time frame, and does the sort of urgency of doing it in a day change how you play or play a role in that at all?
It's a good question. I think what's interesting about it is that you know, the emotionally charged energy that I think we're drawing from is always entering the musical sphere through improvisation. And for us, like being in the studio for a day, anytime we were like trying to imitate something we had maybe previously done, it felt like it was like okay. But like when we were allowing ourselves to like really be in that moment, that's when the music really like like broke through and like did like we like we're able to access both like the feeling and the like the musical flow state that like expressed that feeling.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm also curious because so you did like the final take. I think I said the final take was in complete darkness.
Yeah,
which is such a like from at first curious like where that thought or that idea came from. Was it just a sort of spur?
I think we were just trying to get in the zone, and it was like we had been going. It had just been like you know, I feel like we had a lot of stuff that we were really proud of already at that point in the day. But I think we were kind of like in that place of like, let's just leave it. Let's just really dig down in there deep and like see what is left. And honestly, like basically the whole like B side, the second half of the record and some of my favorite material on the record is all from that take.
Oh, that's killer. Does something like when you remove sight from the equation, like, you know, within an improvisation, does that change or like shift something?
I mean, I think that like, I don't like open my eyes a lot when I'm playing. Anyway.
Fair.
I'm not like, I kind of have this sense that with my eyes closed, I'm focusing like all of the energy of like taking in the world like towards my ears. And so I actually feel like my ability to be listening and like responding is higher. It's kind of in this like Spider-Man-esque, like I'm just like I don't know, leaning into that particular realm.
Yeah. One of the things like this, especially true on this record, I think this you could probably apply to a number of things you do, but so like I think of you kind of, I guess I think of you as a drummer. I don't know what the hell I think of you as. Sorry. I think of you as like a lot of things, you know?
Perfect. That's the goal. Unknown.
But like, I really love how, you know, like your drums aren't just, you're not just keeping time, right? You're like, you're sampling and looping and it's going through effects. And I'm curious just, and maybe even specifically with this record or even in general, how you think about your role, like when the percussion is part of the texture and the atmosphere as much as it is about rhythm.
Yeah. I think specifically in this project too, it's like Amrtha and I are both using a lot of feedback. And in that sense, like we're using the feedback to create a harmonic kind of like mode and that we're then responding to. And in a way, like it gives Amrtha like the harmonic sense of like what she's improvising off of in terms of like, you know, what is where is this like rooted? And that's always changing because feedback is so unpredictable and like kind of like
right.
You know, depending on how many people are in the space, you know, that is going to change like how we respond to it and like what we're basing it off of. But also in a sense, like in the more percussive textural space, I think wanting to spread the breadth of like the expression of where, like what the music can do and what it needs. And with the feedback stuff and also some of the sample material and more synth material, it's like, wanting to get into a space that's more lush and less about rhythm and more about, you know, that part of my music making, which is like I can have just as much fun like playing with synths and in the DAW like and like looping and like having all the pedals out as much as I like playing the drums. And so in this case I definitely feel like there's a vacillation between both and like how they meet in the middle.
Yeah, that's really interesting. My partner is currently like learning to play the drums and has been thinking a lot about a lot of this stuff. Like, as you know, like, do I just want to play like in bands or do I want to? And we were just talking about how it's like, you can do anything with percussion, really. Like, I mean, it can be. So I need to play her. I need to make sure she hears your guys' record. Be like, see, this is what, you know, anything is possible. I guess kind of the last thing is, so this project, it grew out of like personal loss, I think is kind of where, in the sort of sessions between you guys, how does grief like actually manifest in the sound world you guys are creating? Is there something specific like you're trying to channel or release, or is it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're trying to, I think there's like a cathartic sense for us in terms of mm-hmm. what we want to access when we're playing this music. And I think Amurtha always, when we're doing live sets, does a great job kind of like setting up that conversation for the audience and for all of us, of like, just that it's something that we, I think, in Western culture don't like always provide a lot of space for or give ourselves a lot of space for. And it's something that we're always, you know, holding in some capacity, whether it's like a global capacity of like witnessing genocide, or if it's like an individual that's like really close to us that we lose. And like, those things are, I think at a certain point you start to see and feel how that's like always a part of our experience. And so wanting to give that space and like allow listeners and ourselves some time to be with that and not be afraid mm-hmm. of it and not push it away and like actually kind of like open it up and like, and which is like, you know, it's a hard thing to do. And like, you yeah. know, I think that, as you mentioned, like Amurtha and I started this project out of having both experienced like pretty intense personal loss. And we even started collaborating because we were having like a number of conversations just about that loss and like opening up that space kind of just on our own. And then as soon as we started playing music, we kind of felt the connection between like those conversations and like where the music was going.
That's awesome. Well, I absolutely adore this record. So I'm
thank you.
Yeah. And hope to see you guys live sometime. Cause,
yeah, we're going to be doing it. We're going to keep playing some shows.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Glad there's a future to the
always.
All right. Well, I don't have any good, like, clever segue here, so we're just gonna transition and dive into this.
Beautiful.
And as ever, I'm gonna start with, what is the first song that you remember?
Yeah, here, I'm gonna bring up my list here.
Always recommended, because none of us have good memories anymore.
Yeah, I definitely cannot remember what I said. Okay, then I'm gonna have to look here. Okay, so I put the Rugrats theme. which was, you know, early 90s Nickelodeon TV. And not until much later in my life did I realize that it was composed by Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo.
I had no idea until I saw, I had no clue until I got your list. That's wild.
Yeah, so sick.
And when I was listening to it the other day, it just, I don't know. It sounds like something that it's so good. Like, I don't know. This sounds like something you'd hear on some like tape label I don't know. If someone told me this was from like an Orange Milk record, like on right. Orange Milk, I'd be like, yeah, totally.
Yeah. And it has the kind of like iconic, like toy piano, like rising thirds thing, yeah. which was also for me, like throughout my entire like life as a mallet player, it's kind of like a toy piano, but it's also kind of like a marimba. And like, I just feel like throughout my life, I was always like, it was always a joke between the perks in the back row, like playing the Rugrats theme. So it's like so ingrained, but that's it's awesome. Also like that show and Mark Mothersbaugh's approach to scoring is like, it's so kind of like twisted and like, it's like got this like children's mentality, but it also has this like extreme like quirkiness. The animation for that show also is just like kind of like out of this world. It's like kind of creepy.
Yeah, I there's stuff from, I think about stuff when I was like growing up and like this, where it's looking back, it's like, wow, they were making this for kids. Like that's awesome, but whoa.
Exactly.
Yeah. And especially seeing, you know, like I have a kid who, I mean, she's 12 now, but yeah, it felt very different. The stuff that was sort of being fed, trying to be fed to kids 10 yeah, years ago. Yeah. Oh, I know. I mean, yeah, we were
90s cartoons where I was like, whoa.
I know. Like my partner, we're trying, we've been explaining to her like Pinky and the Brain, because we have two cats who are both really stupid. Love them to death, but they're idiots.
Yeah. Great.
So we were trying to explain it. We were like, oh, they're like Pinky and the Brain. Like one is an idiot, one thinks he's smart, but he's also an idiot. She's just like, what are you talking? Anyway. Okay. What is the song that, well, I guess first, do you consider yourself a crier?
Yeah, definitely. I cry.
Okay.
I feel like I've accessed it less in the last couple of years, but
yeah,
I definitely let it out.
Good. That's good. We all need to, right? Well, what's a song that will either make you cry or make you like kind of feel in that sort of zone?
And for this one, I picked a song by a really good friend, my friend Ben Saradin, and it's a song of his called "I Like Your Size." And it's Ben is like a super homie, and we lived together for a year in New York, and we're friends for numerous years before that, and have played so much music together, and still keep in touch and see each other all the time. So I think I've just heard Ben play this song like in like multiple different moments throughout my life and our friendship, and it's just an absolute perfect, beautiful like 2+ like just like what did I say? Yeah, it's like just a 2-minute gem, and it's just a perfect song. And it just like the way Ben sings it, and like and our history with that song, like just like opens it up every time.
Yeah, it feels like this just really potent embrace. Like it just the way he sings it, it's just like so beautiful, and it just feels like it's I don't know. It's not like a sad cry. It's like a sort of like everything's going to be okay kind of cry.
Yeah, it's just like and and our history with it is definitely a part of like why I have this like it has this like really really deep emotional resonance for me, but I and it's but it also it's nice that it's not just like sad song, cry song. It's like it's just like an absolutely beautiful song that is also just about something very real. And you know, I feel like Ben does a great job of noticing and expressing the simple things in a really profound way.
This is also a good reminder that I should invite Ben on this show. I've been thinking about that. Ben,
yeah.
He would be such a good guest for the show.
Yeah.
So Ben, if you're listening, watch your inbox. We'll send it to him. All right. Well, on the flip side of things, what's a song that'll put you in a better mood?
Okay, so I put this Hermeto Pascual track, Musica de Lagoa, which like I actually don't know, you know, there's a recording of this, but I know it more as kind of this YouTube video. Yes,
same. And I don't even know if I've heard the actual recording, if I'm honest.
Yeah, but I think it's like the YouTube video of this is like one of the like absolute perfect points on the internet.
Yes.
And so
it's
for
just like pure joy.
It's pure joy. Like for anyone that doesn't know this, it's like Hermeto and Co, like the band, are in a river, and they're just like they're playing songs on bottles and different things that are in the water based on, and so it's like they're playing these like water flutes essentially. Mm-hmm. But it's also like he's just like Hermeto is like this, like he's like shirtless and like he looks like Santa Claus, and he's just like and it's just like they're like bouncing up and down in the water, and it's just
what could be better?
In the water.
And he's I love that part.
In and out. Yeah, he's like, and there's like water coming out of the flute like while he's playing it.
It's just, I don't know. There's this, something I've been thinking about a lot and with projects I've been working on. Like, there's not enough like moments for us as adults to play and experience. Like, and this is so, it's like playful and joyous, and it's, I don't know. I mean, this feels, but it feels very healing in that way.
It's 100%. Like, and I think that's something that he's always represented too musically is like this kind of like playfulness, and that the idea of like, well, the points that we can access with music can be as pure as like the joy itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, what could be better than jamming in a stream with your friends?
It's like, exactly. And I'm like, I love that there's this video of it. I'm just like,
I know.
Like this, we need more of this. Like,
yes. Yeah. That's, 2026. Here's the energy I'm carrying into his Hermeto Pascual. All right. Everybody's favorite question. What is objectively the greatest song of all time?
Yeah. And so I really didn't have to choose this one because it's so obvious. But for me, so I'm going to talk about Tracy Chapman's Fast Car, which is, just an absolutely beautiful song that is also like a heart wrenching, like, like opera. It's like opera.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like this tragic story that feels like it's like everyone connects to in some way, or everyone, like, I was at this pizza shop like a year ago in Brooklyn, and I remember this song came on like in the pizza shop, everyone in the shop, including the employees, like all started commenting on the song. Like everyone was like, oh, this song. Oh yeah, this song. And I was like, exactly. Like everyone has a relationship with this song.
Yeah, it's I feel like there's a handful of songs that are obviously the right answer for this question, because this question's absurd. And this is one of them. It's a perfect song. And the way it's like, it seems deceptively simple, because it's just like the chorus, it's that same riff over and over again, which is like super hard to play. I'm not a great guitar player, but I'm nice. Trying.
Okay.
And the fact that she plays it and sings this just the way, I don't know. I mean, she's gargantuan. She's just, but yeah, it is one of the objectively best songs ever written.
And I wasn't there, but I heard that it was the last song that was played at Dripping this year.
Like the music
festival that happens in outside of New York. And I got word from my friend Leah Roosley, who was leaving, was like in the car leaving the festival, and then heard Fast Car playing and like drove back and ran back into the field to catch the end of.
That's incredible.
That's
man. I love that. Yeah. Okay. Well, what is the song that you used to love, but you think about it now, or if you heard it recently, it doesn't quite do it for you in the same way?
Okay. So for this one, it's kind of an interesting choice. It's not really a song, but I picked Terry Riley's In C.
Yeah.
And I chose it because, I was definitely like in undergrad and in grad school, like, I was studying music, and I was definitely the like come to the NC jam guy. Right. Like I was the one, like I like would print out like a sheet that was like NC, like let's play NC, like, and every, you know, and I would just be like, and it would be like pizza party style or something. And now I'm like, okay, I think I've like, it's like, it's like everywhere all the time.
Right.
In that kind of like new music kind of culture. And for a while I loved it, and now I'm like, I think I'm good. I think I like,
you got your fill.
Yeah, like once you play it like 100 times, like you're good. And like I think I like passed that.
Yeah. No, I get that. Like I, when I saw this on here, I was like, ooh, just because like I love Terry Riley so much. And but within like the and it's very rare, like these days, that I ever hear a version of NC that makes me go, oh, like, which is
exactly.
There's a lot of really just not
like,
great
like,
versions.
No, hey, like I feel like it can be done. I think people can have like also seeing people interact with it for the first time can actually be really beautiful, and like it has something powerful to it. But I think for me, that's the way, that's like the arc that I've been on, where I'm like, okay,
it makes
like,
sense.
Cool. Like I don't need to like really hear that one anymore.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I hope people continue doing it and discovering it, but
exactly.
Like, I'm good.
For me, I'm like, I'm going to take like a 10-year break.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'll come back in 10 years and we'll see how it's going. All right, well, what is a song that some group of people, I don't know, a lot of people, specific people hate it, you don't care, you love it anyway?
Okay, so I feel like holiday songs are kind of like probably come up a lot in this little category, because I feel like they're really divisive, and they're like you're kind of like subjected to them,
right?
So of the kind of like holiday songs that we're frequently subjected to, I actually like love the Paul McCartney song "Wonderful Christmas Time."
Yeah, and
I think like the synths are cool. I think like it's like such a like I love the riffs. Like the video is really stupid, but there's something about it that like, and people like despise this song.
Oh, people hate it. Like really hate it. I saw a thing. I don't know if it was last year or a couple years ago. It was like a meme thing, but it was basically, it was like, this song sounds like it's a bunch of people like doing a bunch of pagan rituals or something. And then people walked in, they're like, no, we're just having a wonderful Christmas time. It's like, that's my favorite. That's how I think of the song now. And it made me like love it even more.
Yeah. It's, I understand why people don't like it, but I think I think what people don't like about it is like exactly what I like about it. I'm like, yeah, this is like an absurd song. Yes. And like, I love that it's like a, like, I'm into like the synth pop Christmas, maybe.
Yeah.
That really hits for me. And
I'm, yeah.
Like, sleigh bells all over it. Like, yeah, it's yeah. like, it's like amazingly terrible. It's like a B movie. Right.
It's amazingly terrible. It is. It is so, yeah. It's so corny, but
yeah.
But it goes so far into corny that I'm here for it. Like, it's,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, know.
Yeah.
That do you think that he was like totally aware of how corny it was and just leaned into that, or do you think he was like,
yeah, I think he knows. I think he was like, yeah, it's a Christmas song. It's a it's like, point is to be corny.
Yeah, like if there's ever a time in your career to be corny, it's like when you're writing a Christmas song.
Yeah, you can just do whatever as long as you talk about Christmas. Like everyone's gonna love it. Like that's right. Like you've met the goal, at, right? By just making it a Christmas song, and then like everything else about it is kind of like,
yeah,
you can do it.
And people who are just hate the Christmas holiday song, they're gonna hate it no matter what it is. Totally. So don't even think about them. Just that's okay. Okay. Do you think of yourself or consider yourself a romantic?
Yeah, yeah, big time.
Okay,
I'm like always since youth. Like I'm the like I'm like having the feelings. I'm trying to like watch the moon from like a particular point, you know, with hell someone
yeah.
or like,
yeah,
there's always like, let's catch a sunset, you know, like that. Absolutely. big time romantic.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Well, what is the most romantic song?
Okay. So I think the most romantic song is also specifically based on like recent events is there's this George McRae song called You Can Have It All.
Yeah.
That's like a disco song. It's like, I wouldn't say that the song itself is romantic, but like I found myself in the position with my partner, Janae, recently where I lip synced the entire song to them, like while I was standing out, like we were like outside and I just like had it playing on my phone and lip synced it to them. And yeah, the lyrics are amazing. Like,
oh,
you can have it all. Like, you want my love, you can have it, you know, like whatever you need, you can have it. It's such a, such yeah. a beautiful like sentiment.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love that.
And there's also like, I found out about this song because there's a Yo La Tengo cover of that song on the record. That's like, and everything turned itself inside out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this record, this is like early 2000s.
I think that may have been the first Yo La Tengo record I actually bought.
Yeah. Incredible.
Right? Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah. And so on that record, they cover that song, which I think is also an amazing.
Right.
And just like, I just feel like that's like, for me, that record is really peak YLT, where it's like,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like mellow, groovy, like Georgia's always like playing with brushes and like, mm-hmm. but it's also got like the kind of funky feedback and like James's like bass lines are incredible. And then there's like, so there's also another song on that record that Ira wrote called Our Way to Fall, which is like also an that one like hits the more romantic space in like the instrumentation.
Yes. Yeah. There's like a real softness to it that kind of just feels like it glows like all around you. And
I
can imagine being like the person that you love, like within that moment.
Yeah. It really captures the feeling of like when like that romantic feeling of like, of both like desire, but also like history of something.
Yes.
like the length of time, like it just, because it's a love story about Ira and Georgia meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, they're in the band together and they've like been together for, I don't know how long, but since for the
a long time, band,
long time.
Yeah.
And so it's just a very sweet, romantic story to write about like having met your partner, mm-hmm. who you've been with for a long time. And yeah, and it's just like, it just glows like my heart, like,
yes,
gets a little extra glow too.
Yeah, man, I hadn't thought about that. I don't remember the last time I listened to this record. And so I hadn't thought about this in a while when I was put on. I just kept listening. I listened to the record like three times in a row or something. I'm just was reminded of how just incredible that record is.
Days of Disco.
Ugh.
A lot of crying in G. All these songs, they're just like they're also very like, I remember like listening to that record while taking a long bus trip in the rain and like listening to it, like looking out the window, and there's like rain on the bus window, and I'm like 23, and I'm just like, you know, I'm like having feelings, and
just like I'm in a movie right now. Wow,
really, really hitting the spot.
Yeah, man, excellent choices.
I'm glad. They're connected.
All right. Well, what is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
I went for better here, as I'm a pretty positive guy.
Hell yeah. Yeah. You know, we try to keep it pretty posy on here.
Yeah. But. Yeah. I feel that for sure.
Except for behind the paywall.
this choice was interesting. I picked this Harumi Hosono track that's called Luminescent / Hotaru, which is from the, like, I think it's called Philharmony is the name of that record. It's one of his solo records from the 80s. And I knew Hosono's music from Yellow Magic Orchestra, and, you know, love Yellow Magic Orchestra. You know, just they're like, they're the Beatles of the 70s and 80s. Like they're the Beatles of the 80s from Japan. Like they just had this like super career that like they were doing all sorts of things that are all like luminary kind of like individual solo artists.
Yeah.
And I started listening to Hosono's records because he also has so many of his little songwriter records, but then he also was doing the more like abstract kind of, you know, it's not really ambient music, but it's definitely like some kind of like experimental electronica, like early electronica. And this particular track like samples like gamelan and also has like this incredible kind of like Casio auto chord progression. And it's just like a really like, it's unlike anything I've ever heard. And I love this track so much. And it really just like, I was like, this guy can do anything.
Yeah. I think one of the words you describe is like mysterious, and it is very, I don't know. I had a very similar experience because I knew like Yellow Magic Orchestra and stuff. And I remember hearing some of this stuff. I can't remember if it's like particularly a song, but like this sort of, and it just sort of blew my mind. It's like, oh my God, it's this guy. And then I remember hearing like the Cochin Moon soundtrack, which is like all this like abstract electronics. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy literally could do anything.
Yeah. And I just like love his touch with it. And I think like Ryuichi Sakamoto also like incredible artist and member of Yellow Magic Orchestra. And like, I think is maybe like similarly well, like maybe probably more well known for like what his like film scores and other kind of like electronica adjacent work. But the Hosono stuff, I also like, I really connect with it in this kind of other way that I think there's like a lightheartedness and mysteriousness that combine in a lot of his music that I find really inspiring. And
I think that's like, that's a really good point. And that's such an interesting combination because I think that so a lot of stuff, if you think of it as mysterious, there's this sort of oftentimes a sort of underlying darkness or like, I don't know, his music is serious, but like a serious, you know what I mean? And then his stuff, it has that, but yeah, there's like maybe some more playful quality or more.
Yeah. And like, I feel like the songs records are like pretty playful too. Like there's like a, almost like a silliness in like, Hosono House, which is like the kind of classic, like early, like songs record that I think is, I think there's just this kind of, like playful guy energy to it that I love.
Yeah, I love him. Man. All right, what are your favorite lyrics?
Okay, I picked this one because I thought it was funny.
It is objectively funny.
And I felt like it fits, you know, I feel like it makes sense in this place. I picked Alvin Lucier's I Am Sitting in a Room.
I think it's like a perfect answer, actually.
I'm like, it's like conceptual art lyrics, you know, it's like he was, you know, Lucier is like a scientist, way he approaches sound and like his compositional sense is like truly like trying to like explore and understand, like it's like research that turns into a composition or research as composition. And you know, this one, it's It's beautiful. I mean, I didn't put all the lyrics. Obviously, the lyrics are like actually a paragraph.
Right.
But yeah, but I think I am sitting in a room is kind of like gets us going.
Right. It's yeah. Like I said, I love this. This is like one of my favorite pieces of music ever created. So I remember like the first time hearing it, it was one of those things that sort of broke my brain open in this really wonderful way of seeing like, oh my God, there's all this other possibility in the world of sound and music and art. And
he's just like, I like was so lucky and like got to meet him one time when he was doing a performance at Mass Mocha in North Adams in Massachusetts. And, and he was just like the sweetest man, like just, and like, clearly I feel like he just like, you know, you read any of his like texts or you like watch videos of him and like, or hear him explain his work. And it's just like, it was very, he's very deep and profound, but like, there's no, he's so accessible and like,
yeah.
And like open with the way that he talks about it. And it's not, I don't know. He feels unveiled in some way where I'm like, oh, this person just wants to share what he found.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's always been one of the things that really I think drawn me to his approach is there is this, it's like this, he shows you can do these very like serious, like deeply conceptual things, but try to let everybody in at the same time.
Totally. And, even if they and like maybe you will not want in by the end.
Right.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm sure
that. It's like we're like, oh man, like he's really combining the thought and like the conceptual and the materiality and like into one thing, and this piece like does it like seamlessly.
Totally,
such a awesome way.
What song have you or can you listen to the most?
Yeah, this one's Weezer. I put on Undone Sweater Song, but basically anything from the Blue Album really counts here for me. They are my favorite band of my youth, no doubt.
Awesome. I remember, yeah, like I loved the Blue Album when it came out, and I still love the Blue Album, but there's, I don't know, something about Weezer in 2025. It doesn't work for me.
No, absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
No. I'm not. I feel like this is like a crystallization.
Yes.
Like a time period and a time period in their career where I'm like, this was working.
Yeah.
This is like, this still hits. I watched the music video for this song also when I was like, it's amazing.
Yeah. I was watching it just before we got on here and I was like, man, this still hits.
Yeah. It's cool. They're like, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like that time period they were doing I'm like, in some ways, I'm like, wow, they're still a band. Like, good.
Right. Yeah,
like
yeah,
you can, that's cool, but I'm just back there. I'm forever back there with whatever. That was probably like, what is that, 95-96 or something?
Yeah, earlier. Yeah, 94, 95,
94. It's 94. Wow. Oh wow, 94. Yeah.
Man, that's 30 years ago. Jesus. Here we go. How about that?
That's why it's aged well.
Yeah. I remember like having such a moment with this. And then I still remember like the first Rentals album. And that was really one of the things that got me obsessed with like synthesizers, just because it was, nice. It was one of, yeah. Anyway, I haven't listened to that in 25 years. So I don't know if that holds up at all. Okay. What is the song you most recently fell in love with?
To this one, I picked this track, it's called Proprioception, and it's by this artist PQ. I don't really know them. I found it on Bandcamp. It was like, I think it was suggested to me on Bandcamp, and I listened to it. It's like, it's more on the dance music side of things. It's like, but it's like extremely rhythmic and like kind of like quirky, and it's like kind of like polyrhythmicity or something.
Yeah.
And it's also like kind of got these like corny, like big Tom Phil,
yes.
I think are like hilarious and I love them. And but it really like, it has this propulsion that is I'm like obsessed with. It just like really like draws me in. Like I feel like I'm driving a car even when I'm listening to it.
This was totally new to me, and this is awesome. The whole album is awesome.
Yeah, the whole album is awesome. And it goes all over. It's like kind of sometimes it's more ambient and like sometimes it's more like super rhythmic, but it's yeah.
Yeah. And I know nothing about it. The guy, I think his name is Pete Jones.
Right.
And he's in a band that I never heard of. Yeah. That I can't think of. Sorry to Pete, but I'll put a link to this specific album in the show notes because I feel like people will really love this if they know, like, yeah, maybe people, cool. people do know about it. I don't know, but I've never heard anybody talk about it.
I don't know how it entered into my orbit, but it was sent into my orbit. And, I was like, oh wow, this is fun. Like,
yeah,
it feels a little bit like I do listen to a lot of like Food Man and,
mm-hmm. Oh God, I love Food Man.
And I feel like it hits a similar spot that the Food Man records do where it's like just, but yeah. And I'm also obsessed with Food Man, and I feel like maybe that's like my secret like dance music obsession. Even though he's like, I don't know, he's like dance music, but he's like hardware techno, but he's also like abstract. Like I saw him play a set at Public Records last year, and it was like totally like all like it was more textural and like and gestural, and it was just amazing. Like he just has complete control over like sound, like electronic sounds, and making them like viscerally grab your body and throw them around.
Man, oh yeah, I've never seen him live. I would love to do that. I love Food Man. I put out a tape of his in like 2013.
Sweet.
And just working with him, he's like the coolest dude. No, he's just like the easiest, coolest dude. And I was so like back then, you know, he was just, that was pretty early on, but I remember just seeing him grow and get more and more. It's like, I'm so glad to see this getting like as much love and attention as it is. Cause yeah. But yes, PQ also.
Yeah.
Amazing.
PQ.
I'm going to listen to everything on the Bandcamp one of these days. Cause
yeah.
And the art's all really good. It's like this combination of like,
the cover is
weird and silly and yeah, but yeah, yeah.
It's like yeah. Uncanny. I'm just like, ooh, perfect.
I know.
This makes me feel weird.
I know. Yeah, it seems weird. It fits the music really well because the music makes me feel a little weird too, but in a way I want to feel weird.
Yeah.
All right. Last two questions. What is the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily the song itself, but you associate with something or someone, experience, etc.
Okay, so for this one, I picked the Marvin Gaye song, Come Live With Me, Angel, which is, I'm forgetting, what is the name of the record that it's on? It's on...
I'm drawing a blank, and
I'm looking it up. It's got that incredible cover. Oh, I Want You. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And I picked this song because, I don't know, it's a song that my partner, Janae, and I... Like Janae showed me the song when we were
first nice.
And it kind of became this like that whole record kind of became this like early point of like our like courting each other and like meeting each
other. That's awesome.
You know, it's like it's an extremely like sexy record. It's like not subtle. It's like, no. It's like it's pretty overt with its like it's sentimental and but it's also like it's very like there's like an animal sense of connection and love and like sexiness and it's a hot record.
Yes. Yeah. It's definitely one of those records. It's one of those ones, like another one is like Voodoo by D'Angelo. Absolutely. Where it's like,
exactly.
It's, I think I don't remember who I was talking. We were on the show. It's like, a lot of children have been conceived to this record.
Exactly. I know. I was like, damn, am I going to like talking about this record? It's like, whoa. It's like,
I know.
It's okay. This is like spicy. This is behind the paywall. Though, so it's okay.
Yeah. No, actually, this part isn't behind the paywall. Sorry. that's awesome. But yeah. And hey, shout out to Janae and their new record.
Go check it out.
Yeah. That's another favorite record of mine this year. God, I love it.
Delicious Collision,
yeah,
rocks.
Another one on in on one of the greatest labels on the planet, on PTP. Right. Anyway, I should do an episode with them and I can talk more about that. And
absolutely. Rather than
insert into your episode. All right, last question. What's your favorite song?
Wow, what an impossible question, Brad.
Why?
I currently have three answers.
And I'm sure that's cold from like 300.
This one I was like, God, wait. And then I was talking to Janae about it. And Janae's like, just pick your favorite song right now. And I'm like, yeah, but like, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to still. Okay, but I'm gonna talk about. Okay, so Miles Davis Pharaoh's Dance from Bitches Brew is a track that I've listened to for like, I remember listening to it like in middle school. I was like very young. It was on the iPod. Thank you, Dad, like for like having known about Miles Davis and like putting it on the iPod. And I'm like listening to it in the car. And I'm like, this is really, I love this. Like, what is this? And, you know, Jack DeJohnette is like from there became one of my favorite drummers. And like, you know, he's on that record. And I think that there's something about it has the improvisatory spirit. It has this like mysteriousness. It has like the mm-hmm. studio as instrument, like editing stuff that I like kind of like then I wrote a paper on this record in college. Cause I reading about, you know, how they made it. And like, then I learned, you know, it's like, I just feel like I keep learning things about this record, like as I, throughout my life. So it felt like a cool choice. And also just, you know, because we lost Jack DeJohnette so recently and I've just been like listening to his stuff and thinking about his playing and like the role that he filled in like the music community. And like, I feel like just everyone has like gushing, beautiful things to say about like his, how he was a musician in the world and how he collaborated. And it's like, damn, that's the goal. That's like where,
like that's what it's about.
It's incredible. It's like, there's, you know, someone to look up to in that kind of way. And
well, that's a beautiful place to end.
There's other ones that I will also say that I was gonna put, like, I have to talk about Elion Radig because I feel like Elion Radig was so important to the making this Neti Neti record. Like, we were listening to a lot of Elion's music, and like, I don't actually think that our music sounds anything like, I mean, it does in some ways sound like Elion Radig, but it doesn't have the like exact same kind of, you know, Elion's music is so patient and so spacious and meditative in this way that like you really do kind of like float off once you like settle into the music, you kind of like float into this other world. Mm-hmm. I think that we were approaching that, but then also whenever the cathartic energy like took us and compelled us out of that, we would get pulled out of that and follow into a more explosive place. So I was saying that I feel like our record sounds like Can trying to play Elion Radig. Like,
I love that. Yes. That, oh my God, that like really makes sense. Yeah.
We're like, we're trying to do it, but then it's like, but then we start like playing this like groove, and then there's like, and then like Amrita's like kind of like really kind of like getting like, you know, like the vocals kind of like start to like blast off a little bit on top of it, and like we allow that kind of space to happen, which, you know, also love Can, but but then it like inevitably will like settle back into this place that feels like that kind of meditative spot. And I've been listening to Adnos One a bunch, which is like the last piece that Elion made before she took a big break and like actually went and like studied Buddhism. And it's a really special one. It's like maybe one of the most austere, most like singular.
Oh yeah.
It's just an incredible piece of music.
Yeah. No, yeah. I love that. Can trying to play Elion Radig. that's all I'm gonna think of now. I don't know. I've heard it a couple times. I think I'm more familiar actually with like Adnos 2.
Okay.
But all of them, like, I was listening to it again and I was, yeah, like you said, it's just, I don't know, man. She like creates this stuff that it feels like a lot of times it's like time just stops and you're just like, you're just there, like in this, and I don't even know, this space.
Yeah, I feel my cells slow down. Like, mm-hmm. I feel this like this portal opening, and I think that kind of portal opening is maybe the thing that Amartha and I have been the most interested in terms of like, can we open this portal to a place that a feeling that we, you know, as audiences and musicians and listeners and people don't always have access to.
Yeah. Cool. Once again, thank you to Matt Evans. Good times were had. Listen to all his picks at the link in the playlist link in the show notes, and please check out Echo of Being, Grace and Rot, from Neti Neti, which is out now on Dinzu Artifacts. Such a good album, man. And the, I don't know, hearing the stories about the recording and just some of that, like, it's, yeah, awesome. All right, that's it. Once again, rating, review, subscribe, all that stuff. You know the best. I don't know. Till next time, keep on listening where the hell you want.